ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. முகம் கரோதி வச்சலம் பங்கும் லங்கயதே கிரிம் யத் கிருபா தமகம் வந்தே ஸ்ரீகுரும் தினதாரணம் பரமானந்த மாதவம் ஸ்ரீ சைதன்யமீஸ்வரம். So we continue with the Bhakti Vaibhava study of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And normally we will move to the final section of chapter 2, but because it is a very important section, we're going to revisit it. It is difficult to do justice to the topic. Of course, you can say that with each verse of the Bhagavatam, but this particular section is especially important. We will be reading text 19 from chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service. Tada rajastamo bhava kamalopadayaschaye cetaettairanavitam ஸ்திதம் சத்வே ப்ரசீததி ததா ராஜஸ்தமோ பாவா காமலோபாதயஶ்சயே சேதாயதைரநவிதம் ஸ்திதம் சத்வே ப்ரசீததி தாதா ராஜஸ்தமோ பாவா காமலோபாதயஶ்சயே சேதாயதைரநவிதம் ஸ்திதம் சத்வே ப்ரசீததி. Yes. Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. Purport. A living being in his normal constitutional position is fully satisfied in spiritual bliss. This state of existence is called Brahma Bhuta or Atmanandi, or the state of self-satisfaction. This self-satisfaction is not like the satisfaction of the inactive fool. The inactive fool is in the stage of foolish ignorance, whereas the self-satisfied Atmanandi is transcendental to the material state of existence. This stage of perfection is attained as soon as one is fixed in irrevocable devotional service. Devotional service is not inactivity, but the unalloyed activity of the soul. The soul's activity becomes adulterated in contact with matter, and as such, the deceased activities are expressed in the form of lust, desire, hankering, inactivity, foolishness, and sleep. The effect of devotional service becomes manifest by complete elimination of these effects of passion and ignorance. The devotee is fixed at once in the mode of goodness, and he makes further progress to rise to the position of Vasudev, or the state of unmixed sattva, or Shuddha Sattva. Only in this Shuddha Sattva state can one always see Krishna eye to eye by dint of pure affection for the Lord. A devotee is always in the mode of unalloyed goodness. Therefore, he harms no one. But the non-devotee, however educated he may be, is always harmful. A devotee is neither foolish nor passionate. The harmful, foolish, and passionate cannot be devotees of the Lord, however they may advertise themselves as devotees by outward dress. A devotee is always qualified with all the good qualities of God. Quantitatively, such qualifications may be different, but qualitatively, both the Lord and his devotee are one and the same. So before reviewing the section which is written on the chart, the verses 1 to 22, I would like to read, because today is the appearance day of Sri Radhakund, I would like to read from a purport found in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 36, verse 16, the description of the appearance of Sri Radhakunda as compiled by His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj and his team, translation team. I'll read the translations because it will be too long to read all the Sanskrit. From the Puranas, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted 20 verses describing a joking conversation between Radha and Krishna that took place after Krishna had killed the demon Arista. This conversation, so kindly quoted by the Acharya, describes the origin of Radha Kund and Shyama Kunda, Radha's and Krishna's bathing ponds. The verses are as follows. The innocent young gopi said, "Ah, Krishna, don't touch a snow, O killer of a bull. Alas, even though Arista was a terrible demon, still he was a male cow. So you will have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritrasura. But how can you purify yourself without going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds? Krishna replied, why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch. With this, Lord Mukunda struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, this is the water of the Bhogavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here. When the Supreme Lord had spoken these words, all the holy places went there and appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows. See all the holy places. But the gopis replied, we don't see them as you describe. Then those best of holy places, joining their palms in supplication, spoke up. I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am the Amara Dirgika. I am the river Shona. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tamraparni. I am the holy place Pushkar. I am the river Sarasvati. And we are the Godavari, Yamuna, and Reva rivers, and the confluence of rivers at Prayag. Just see our waters. After purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant and said, I have produced a pond containing all the various holy places, whereas you, gopis, must never have executed any religious duties on the earth for the pleasure of Lord Brahma. Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows. I must create an even more beautiful pond, so go to work. Having heard these words, the gopis saw that Aristasura's hoofs had dug a shallow ditch just west of Sri Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands. And in this way, a divine pond manifested in the short span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they produced. He said, go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companions should fill this pond with water from mine. But Radha replied, no. This is impossible, since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow. I will have my countless gopi companions bring the pure water of the Manasa Ganga here in billions of pots. In this way, I will fill this lake with my own water and thus make it renowned and equaled in making its renown unequaled in the entire world. Lord Krishna then gestured to a heavenly personality who was an intimate associate of all the holy places. Suddenly that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Sri Vrishabhanu, Radharani. Then with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. O Goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories, nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them, and thus he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued. He is always anointing your lotus feet with nectarian charu and yavaka and decorating them with ankle bells. And he rejoices and feels most fortunate simply by satisfying the tips of the toes of your lotus feet. On his order, we have immediately come here to live in this most excellent pond, which he created by one stroke of his heel. But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of your desire bear fruit. Hearing this prayer, spoken by the representative of the full assembly of holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, "So kindly tell me your desire." They then told her plainly, "Our lives will be successful if we could come to your pond. That is the benediction we desire." Glancing at her beloved from the corners of her eyes, the daughter of Prisha Banu replied with a smile, "Please come." Her gopi companions all agreed with her decision and became immersed in the ocean of happiness. Indeed, the beauty of all creatures, both mobile and stationary, was enhanced. Thus, gaining the grace of Srimati Radharani, the holy rivers and lakes in Sri Krishna Kund forcibly broke through its boundary walls and swiftly filled Radha Kund with their waters. Lord Hari then said, "My dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are." Radha replied, "I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastised Arishtasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me." That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radha Kund, generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud, and Srimati Radharani a brilliant flash of lightning, filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanses of the three worlds. Shri Radha Kund ki jai. And I have here some Shri Radha Kund water. This is Kankan Kund. Kankan Kund is the original pond which was digged by the gopis with Kankan, with their bangles, golden bangles. Here it says with hands, sometimes we hair with the golden bangles. And this was an excavation that took place of Sri Radha Kund to clean the lake in June 2009. So somehow somebody gave it to me, and I thought it's the best moment to share it. Would you like to please offer some drops to every devotee? I don't know, in the evening there may be more, but I thought just in case somebody, we don't want anybody to miss it in the evening, but let's heat the iron while it's hot. So we have it now, let's do it. Many of you may have heard that in the beginning of the movement, when devotees started to go to India, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai, they started to swim in Radha Kund as if it was the swimming pool of their village or something. And Srila Prabhupada told devotees to stop bathing at Radha Kund. Although we read in Sri Upadeshamrita that we should take bath in Radha Kund. But Srila Prabhupada said that to take a few drops of Sri Radha Kund equals take full bath. So now we have taken full bath in Sri Radha Kund, regardless of if some of you decide to take also deep up to the top of the head when you go there, depending on your mood or your spiritual master's approval or disapproval. But now we have taken full bath. So I thought to go back to the chapter, to chapter 2, verses 1 to 22. These are two or three sections we have covered during the last 2 weeks of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a summary on the board. This is the beginning of Sutta Goswami's answer to Shaunaka Rishi's questions. On behalf of the sages, Shaunaka Rishi asked how many questions? Six. Six questions, as they have been classified by Srila Prabhupada and the our Sampradaya commentators on the Bhagavatam, Viswanath Chakrabarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami. And in this section, he's answering to the first two questions. But before answering, Sutta Goswami offers Mangala Charana prayers to his spiritual master, Sri Shukadeva Goswami, and to Nara Narayan Rishi, to Srila Vyasadev, to the goddess Sarasvati, in order to properly recite Srimad Bhagavatam, as he had heard it from Srila Shukadeva Goswami when he was speaking it to Maharaj Parikshit when he was at the verge of death. So, and then after that he congratulates the audience by expressing appreciation for the question they have asked. He says that the questions they ask are beneficial for all kinds of human beings because they are related to Krishna. Munaya saddu prishtoham babatpir lokamangalam yat krite Krishna samprasno, because these questions are questions about Sri Krishna. Therefore, yayatma suprasidati, they can fully satisfy the self. So after this invocation and congratulation to the spiritual master and the presiding deities of the Bhagavatam, Nara Narayan Rishi are the presiding deities of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srila Vyasadeva, the author, Suta Goswami starts answering the questions. And he answers first to the first two questions. Who remembers the first two questions? Good. Shreyas, what is the ultimate good for all humanity? And Saram, what is the essence of all scriptures? There are so many scriptures with so many religious teachings. And we could say in modern language, we could say both in Vedic tradition and in other religious traditions of the world. But what is the essence of all scriptures? And then Suta Goswami answers by quoting the verse Savai Pum Samparo Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radokshaye Ai Tukiya Pratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. That the supreme dharma or the supreme occupation is actually pure bhakti, pure devotional service. That is devotional service which is offered to the Lord, even if we don't see him. Adokshaya, he is unperceivable by our present senses. Even if we don't see him, the supreme engagement is to serve him in a continuous way and in a selfless attitude. This is described as Uttama Bhakti, and this is the only activity which can fully satisfy the self. And therefore, this is the ultimate good for all humanity. Because people are searching for happiness, for satisfaction. So by giving them what can, the solution to the problems, the process by which they will be happy, we are offering them the greatest gift, as Srila Prabhupada, as we saw in the first temple, we see it in pictures, we then saw it directly. We may have seen later. But the first temple of ISKCON was named, prophetically, was named Matchless Gift. It was a place where, before being a temple, where they were selling some gifts, with matches, that was, no? Was something like that. Was but I did hear that before it was, there was they were playing with the words and they were selling matches or match boxes, exactly. Empty match boxes, that was why it was matchless gift. I couldn't remember, that's why I was looking at Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu for a hint. So these were empty match boxes, and they were offering this, they were making gifts for people to offer with that. But then this was only the external reason why the place was named like that. Actually, what happened is Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu pointed out, it's incomparable gifts. That was the real meaning. The incomparable gifts were to be given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, in the form of Uttama Bhakti, pure devotional service. So this is the ultimate good. Then also that verse answers the second question. What is the essence of all scriptures? Again, the essence of all scriptures is Uttama Bhakti. As we studied in the first chapter, the Bhagavatam rejects Kaitava Dharma. Kaitava Dharma, a cheating religiosity. Or religiosity which does not aim to Uttama Bhakti. And this is explained in this section. In this section, the four Purusharthas are mentioned. The Purusharthas You know what is that? What some of you can explain? What is Purusharthas? Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And what it means, Purusha, Artha. The goal of, we could say the goal of human endeavor. The goal of human endeavor. The goal of life. And from the scriptures we can receive those goals. Religiosity, material advancement, economic development, artha, sense enjoyment, kama, and moksha, liberation. Liberation from the repeated cycle of birth and death. So, this, we find after this section, from verse 8 onwards, this is explained, you can see on the chart, from 8 to 15, Uttama Bhakti is described as the goal, as the superior goal of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So these activities are not actually the real goals. They are processes which ultimately will bring the religious person, the person who approaches a scripture, to the ultimate goal of pure devotional service. And this message is repeated again and again in all the prayers in Srimad Bhagavatam. Like, for example, the Damodarashtaka prayers we are singing every morning during this sacred month of Kartik. We see how pure devotion is higher even than moksha, non-liberation. Varam deva moksham na moksha vadimba na chanjam vrineham varesha tabiha. The pure devotee Satyavrata Muni is praying, "My dear Lord, I do not desire any kind of benediction. So not any benediction achieved by material religiosity, by dharma, material enjoyment, artha. I mean, economic development. This will be what we use to buy." Material enjoyment, nor elevation to the heavenly planets, and says, Varam deva moksham, not even liberation from material existence, or moksha vadimva, not even attaining the five kinds of liberation in Vaikuntha, in the Vaikuntha planets. We find in Srimad Bhagavatam how the position achieved by Mother Yashoda, prema bhakti, pure love of Godhead, free from all kinds of awe and reverence, is described in the Bhagavatam as vimukti, a special type of liberation. Nemam virincho na bhavo nashrir apyanga samshaya prasadam lepire gopi yattat prapa vimukti dat. It cannot be compared. Even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the goddess of fortune, their devotional service cannot be compared to the service of Mother Yashoda Devi. They are great devotees. They are revered all over the universe by millions of people revered. We are in a tiny planet. So all over the universe, these personalities are revered by millions of people. But Shukadeva Goswami says that their devotional service cannot be compared to the mercy received by Mother Yashoda, who had Krishna as her little son, and who had such intimate exchanges with her. So this is described as vimukti, a special mukti. And this is explained also in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Sutta Goswami says that dharma is meant for becoming attracted to hearing and chanting about Krishna. Uttama Bhakti, pure devotional service. Dharmas vanustita pumsam visvakshena katasuyaha not padayet yadiratim shrama eva ikevalam. If we perform dharma, without pure devotional service, without developing an attraction to hearing and chanting about Krishna, shrama eva ikevalam, that dharma is a waste of time. So, the four purusharthas are described from the perspective of the ultimate purushartha, panchama purushartha, the quintessence. In a Spanish language, we will say quinta esencia, which means fifth, actually. It's very interesting that it matches the Sanskrit. Panchama purushartha, quinta means fifth, quintessence, the fifth goal of life, pure love of Godhead. So then Sutta Goswami describes how actually dharma should have as a goal ultimate liberation. Dharmasya yapavargyasya nartur toyo pakalpate. Nartasya dharma ikantasya kamo labaya smritaha. That actually dharma should have as goal ultimate liberation. And ultimate liberation is not ordinary moksha, but actually is vimukti, pure devotional service. That position from which the devotee does not desire even ordinary liberation. As people who are, many, I will include myself, as those of us who are still struggling with the mind and the senses in this material world, still practicing sadhana without having achieved Shuddha Sattva platform or Bhava Bhakti, which is described in the verse that today we read, we need to get purified by the process of devotional service from rajas and tamas to the point where we become fully situated in goodness, pure goodness. Cheta ettaira navitam stitam sattve prasidati. So we may desire liberation. We may aspire not to desire liberation. That's one thing. But to truly not desire liberation, that's possible only when the soul achieves the level of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, according to Srila Rupa Goswami's explanations in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The characteristic of pure devotional service related to this experience is named Moksha Laguta Krit. That moksha becomes very, very small to the eyes of the person who has achieved Bhava Bhakti, pure devotional service, without, not in the stage of practice as most of us, but at the level of complete divine experience. Of course, sadhana bhakti is also classified as uttama bhakti in that the devotee is following in the footsteps of those who are situated in uttama bhakti, or those who are serving those who are situated in uttama bhakti. If we will get into a debate, are the initiating gurus or instructing gurus in ISKCON, are they Baba Bhaktas or Prema Bhaktas? we could say, okay, if they are serving the Premi Bhakta Srila Prabhupada, then what's the big deal? Servant of the servant of the servant. This is what Srila Prabhupada taught us to aspire for. Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasaha. So even serving those devotees who are not yet sadhakas, but because they are fully dedicated to those pure devotees who are situated at the stage of prema, then there is no difficulty, no problem in coming close to the lotus feet of the Lord. So, Dharma is described, the goal of Dharma is moksha, liberation. And the goal of liberation is bhakti. And then emphasis is given that artha should not be used for sense gratification. If we have wealth, wealth should be used for devotional service. Nartasya dharmaikantasya kamola bhaya smritaha. That means we should, then the next verse explains that, we should use wealth for self-preservation. We need some amount of sense enjoyment in order to maintain body and soul together in our present condition of existence. So it's okay that we spend for that, but actually we are spending for self-realization, because that's the purpose of self-preservation. Kamasya nendriya pritir labo jivata yavata jivasya tatva jigyasa. That actually we should not use desires that we have, kama, should not be used for sense enjoyment, indriya priti. Only self-preservation, labo jiveta yavata, to maintain the self in this condition. Jivasya tatva jigyasa. The purpose of human life is to understand tattva, to understand the supreme truth. Not just understand, because actually understand means to surrender unto him. This is what Bhagavad Gita explains. The Lord says, Bahunam janmanamante jnanava man prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlaba. That after many, many births of cultivating understanding, cultivating knowledge, one person comes to realize that one that should surrender to the Lord. And this is actually the goal of knowledge. So, jivasya tattva jigyasa. Tattva should be understood by devotional service. And then tattva is described. What it is tattva? And how is tattva described in this section? What is the foundational characteristic of tattva described in the next verse, in text number 11? Yes, thank you. What is the foundational characteristic of tattva? Non-dual substance, jnanam advayam. It is non-dual. It is non-dual, but yet tattva becomes manifest in different ways, in different dimensions. So what are those dimensions? Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The impersonal feature, all-pervading, sarvam kalu idam brahma, and then the localized manifestation of the Lord within the heart of every living being, also as the Chaitya Guru, the Lord as the spiritual master within the heart, and then Bhagavan, the supreme being, the supreme personality of Godhead. So Tattva is described in this way, and then how do we approach Tattva? The next section describes how to approach Tattva. Of course, that's part still of 8 to 15, but what is the approach to Tattva? So we need to approach Tattva with faith and through the association of devotees. Good, very good. That's Radha Dana Munayo. And then Bhakti Ashruta Grihitaya. Our studies should be done with bhakti, with devotion to the Lord. With devotion to the Lord and to the spiritual master. Yasya deve para bhaktir, yata deve tata gurav, tasya ite katite yarta, prakashante mahatmana. The secrets of these verses from Shvetashvatara Upanishad, the last verse. So all the secrets described in the Upanishads, in the scriptures, are revealed to one who worships with devotion God, Deva, and Guru, the spiritual master. So this is the process of approaching Tattva described in this section. And then from verses 16 to 22, the gradual progress of bhakti is described. From Shraddha to Prema. Although we could say, okay, already in text 12, that Shraddha Dana Munayo, already Shraddha is beginning to describe the process of approaching by listening with faith. But according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanations, and we won't have time to get into details, His Grace Burijan Prabhu in his book has this Unveiling His Lotus Feet, quotes Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this section, and he divides the nine stages from Shraddha to Prema described by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, divides them into 14 stages. And Chakravarti Thakur in some of his books also says, first Sadhu Sangha, then Shraddha, then Sadhu Sangha. So we say, generally we say Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha. But actually, many times there is no faith, and the sadhus come and they touch us and they make us develop faith by their example, by their transcendental devotion or spiritual energy. We feel surcharged and we desire to become like them. Then our Shraddha becomes lightened. And then from there, more sadhu sangha, then practice of devotional service, initiation, and so on. So, these processes are described gradually in these verses from 16 to 22. 16 describes Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha by serving the devotees. We perform great service, and as a result of that, we develop a taste to listen about the messages of Godhead. Vasudeva kata ruchi. So Vaishnava seva is very important in order to develop taste. And conversely, it's very important also to avoid Vaishnava Parada, which will be the opposite. If we commit Vaishnava Parada, then our taste for hearing and chanting diminishes, and then our material desires, our desires for the other Purusharthas may creep in or may become revived if they were not completely uprooted, which is generally the case. Even if they were uprooted, we have, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's analysis, there could be some type of reaction which will not impede ultimately pure devotional service, but will be some kind of reaction, as in the case of Bharata Maharaj and Vritrasura, which we discussed in some of the previous discussions on this topic last week or last 2 weeks. And then the emphasis is given on hearing and chanting. Shrimbatam Svakata Krishna Punja Shravana Kirtana Ridantastoya Badrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. The Lord cleanses the heart of the devotee who sincerely listens to his transcendental messages. And then Nishtha is described last week. His Holiness Prabhupada Maharaj described that, commented on that verse, Nashta Prajeshu Apatreshu. Nishta is described, and then in the next verses, Bhava and Prema is mentioned. How by becoming fixed in devotional service, and by continuous serving, naturally the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance, subside, and pure goodness becomes fully manifest. And then we can truly see ourselves and see the Lord as He is. This is a summary of this section. I thought we should revisit it. It's a very important section, and we never should actually stop revisiting this section. The first and second canto are Krishna's lotus feet, according to the Padma Purana. We should never stop revisiting Krishna's lotus feet, even if we study other cantos, and especially this section. Thank you very much. One or two comments or questions? Our Bhagavad Purana illustrious teacher, if you'd like to make any comments or... I'll repeat it for the devotees in the kitchen. His Grace Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu mentioned that it is interesting how different Vaishnava Acharyas have corresponded this section of the Bhagavatam with the progress evolution, gradual evolution of the devotee. And he referred to an Indian philosopher who refers to progress philosophy as opposed to leap philosophy. So actually our philosophy is progress, philosophy is practical, although there is also an element of leap philosophy. Is that correct? thank you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Rest of the chapter tomorrow. Plus the course. We don't have a workshop tonight from 6 to 7 for two reasons, because of this evening celebration and because of the teacher training course. Some students have a very intense day, so we don't want to overburden anyone.